Want to advertise your business in a cost-effective way? It's time to give podcast advertising a try. Research shows a high rate of podcast listeners made a purchase as a result of an ad they heard on a podcast. Visit podbean.com/brands to launch a cost-effective podcast advertising campaign in minutes. That's podbean.com/brands.
Welcome to Yolitics, the home of cold beer and hot takes on Texas politics.
For the first time in a long time, we're having the same beverage.
We are. It's called a Yingling. And I'm sure a lot of people have heard of this because what is it? It's the oldest brewery in the country, isn't it?
It is.
And see that? Did you see that? Just peeled it right off. Just twisted it right off with my hand.
That's not a twist.
I was worried it was going to be one of those that's not.
Remember that line from Seinfeld when his girlfriend opens it and he's like, that's not a twist off. Yingling is a great beer. But what's interesting about Yingling, they have a bunch of different ones, black and tan, lager, light lager, and different ones. But I like the lager. It's popular, obviously, on the East Coast. But for the longest time, they didn't sell their beer east or west of the Mississippi River. They're just going to start doing that. In Texas, they're going to start brewing in Fort Worth and going to start distributing August 23rd. But how did we get it? Our producer, Taylor Lumsden, smuggled some in from his vacation.
So I was wondering how we got this. It just showed up one day, and I didn't know quite how it came about. That's an interesting backstory.
He packed it in coffee grounds and sneaked it in.
Got to get it past the dogs. Yeah.
Yes, got to get it past them, man.
You know, so, an interesting thing about this beer, Jason, is that there was controversy with this beer several years ago. Do you remember that?
I don't. What happened?
I have the Forbes.com article here pulled up. Yeah, this is from October 27th of 2016. Beer drinkers are boycotting Yingling after its billionaire owner endorses Trump. There was a sort of political thing that came out of this. So it's fitting, Jason, that we're having this today because that wasn't planned. Somebody just pointed this out to me a second ago as I was grabbing the Yingling. They pointed out to me, yeah, that was the one that some people were boycotting. And it's fitting that we're doing that today because we are talking about the Republican Party here in Texas and, you know, how some say it has sort of become two parties, the Trump wing and the traditional GOP, and what that's going to mean for the 2022 election, because we're seeing a lot of activity in some big races.
Yeah, and specifically, the two biggest races are the race for attorney general, and of course, the biggest race is the race for governor. And what's interesting is that, as you probably know if you're following the headlines, conservatives are lining up to run against the incumbents, Greg Abbott and Ken Paxton. This is unusual, as you probably know, because conservatives people don't usually challenge their own incumbents, especially conservatives. So here you go, and you have not only one, but in the AG's race, you have two people challenging Ken Paxton. In the governor's race right now, you have three people challenging Greg Abbott. And we're still a long ways away from the primary, which is next March at the earliest, perhaps later than that. So why are so many conservatives lining up? Do they have a shot? Can they send, you know, either of them into the runoffs? Who knows about that?
And the thing with this is that it does complicate the general election for whoever wins these primaries because, you know, they're being pulled right now. These candidates, you know, Greg Abbott and Ken Paxton, conservative through and through, obviously, over the years, are being pulled even further, perhaps to the right in some cases, especially Governor Abbott, I should say. Being pulled much further to the right to try to win over that base and win over the people who will be voting in that Republican primary. The question is, can you move fast enough back toward that center position to try to grab independents and maybe even some Democrats come the general election? And that gets harder the further to the right you go.
So we have two conservatives on the podcast here with us. The first on the line is Connie Burton. She's been around for a few years. She is a former state senator representing Tarrant County, and she is now the founder of the Texan.news. It's a news website that covers a lot of state politics as well, too. So Connie's on the line with us. Connie, we've talked about, you know, kind of what the podcast is going to lay out here, the AG's race and the governor's race. Let's talk specifically, though, about the governor's race here. You have Chad Prather in it. He is a talk show host on the right, we have Don Huffines, a former state senator from Dallas, who has really come out strong against Governor Abbott. And Abbott's clearly spooked by him because Abbott stole some of his ideas, especially about the state-funded border wall. And then most recently, we have Alan West, the former chairman of the state Republican Party. So, you know, as you look at this here, how does it all shake out? How does it stack up?
It's interesting, to say the least. Of course, we are talking about a Republican primary, right? So I think a lot of people, you know, kind of forget about that. Think it's going to be, you know, Republicans and Democrats, all right. of these together. And it's like, why are they splitting the vote? It's like, no. This is a primary election. This is where Republicans in the state decide who they want to go on to run for the general election. And so, you know, obviously it's a much smaller amount of people. It's mostly base supporters that get involved in the primary election. And so it's all going to be very interesting to see how it comes out. I will say the fact that we have three challengers to a sitting Republican governor is quite telling. There is frustration out there. There would not be three challengers to a sitting governor if there was not frustration out there with the current sitting governor.
And what is the frustration? Is the frustration generally that he is not to the right enough? We have seen Governor Abbott kind of tack that direction here.
Right. I would venture to say that a primaried politician is always going to be further to the left or right, whichever party it is, right? And so that's my particular opinion of why you're starting to see this tack to the right. You know, clearly this last year of coronavirus response by the governor has definitely catapulted these challengers to do what they are doing. And yet their main focus is not on the coronavirus edicts, which is, I find kind of interesting, really, right? I know that's what catapulted them to decide to do this. And yet their issues are very, you know, very important. Not that the coronavirus isn't, because it absolutely is, but it's kind of long-standing issues that people have been frustrated with for a very long time. You know, like property taxes, the border, what is election integrity, right? Most of them are running on these kinds of issues. Now, as the year goes on, I'm sure we'll hear more and more and more about the coronavirus response of Governor Abbott. I'm sure that'll be a part of their talking points as well.
Connie, let's go through the challenges here. I want you to handicap their strengths and weaknesses. Let's start alphabetical order here. We'll go with Don Huffines first, the former state senator, Republican from Dallas County. He wasn't the first to announce. He's the second to announce. But where is he strong? Where is he weak? How does he match up to Abbott?
Well, certainly he is strong in that he has a record. He has been in the state Senate, you know, and of course, in the Senate in Texas, you only have 31 state senators. So, you know, you tend to have name ID from that alone. However, he does not have the name ID that an Alan West does, right? So, you know, people certainly know him. He's run in Texas before. He's won an election in Texas. He's got a record to run on. He was a very conservative senator, one of the most conservative senators. So he's got a record to run on. He's done, you know, he actually authored constitutional carry when he was in the Senate. You know, he got rid of Texas, what was it, Dallas County Schools, which was basically a corruption scandal. You know, he's got things like this that he can talk about and go throughout Texas. So I think he's got, you know, he has a knowledge of the work of the legislature and how it works.
And of course, he got rid of the red light cameras.
That's right. I forgot about that. That was awesome.
I'm not endorsing anybody here, but I'm glad the red light cameras are gone.
Well, that's everybody. I mean, that is I think people on both sides of the aisle bipartisan, are very happy to see that.
Very popular.
Yeah. So how about Chad Prather, too? Let's go through these three challengers.
Sure.
Chad Prather, he's a talk show host. people may not be familiar with him unless they maybe listen to some of his work. How does he stack up? Does he have a shot? Does he have a shot at raising money?
You know, I'm curious about that one. You know, I've been mulling this, obviously, since you reached out to me. And you know, my first and foremost thought is, you know, he obviously has name ID because he has an audience that he's been right. speaking to for a very long time. So he's got a huge amount of support. How much that support is literally in Texas, I frankly don't know, right? It might be more national than it is in the state. But, you know, so he's got a name ID. And then I was thinking, but you know, he doesn't have any kind of experience in the state legislature, right? How the government works, you know, you just can't go in and say, I want to do this. You've got to follow, the state constitution. There's differences, obviously, than just saying you want to do something and getting legislation passed and those kinds of things. However, as I was thinking this, I just thought, oh yeah, but we just came off of President Trump, who, you know, I kind of discounted my own thinking there. You know, he was somebody that had not run for office. Who would have thought that he would be the president of the United States, never having held an office? So having said that, I don't think Chad has all of that. You know, are people ready for that in Texas? I don't know.
And then the last one here, of course, too, is Lieutenant Colonel Alan West, who just announced the other day that he would challenge Governor Abbott as well, too. Alan West is a former congressman from Florida. He's the former chairman of the Republican Party of Texas. He's pretty well liked by the party base, isn't he?
He absolutely is. So he's got going for him, of course, is the name ID. I mean, he's got national recognition as well as state recognition, right? And like you said, he ran the party and came off of, I've noticed, you know, one of his messages is the election previous to him did not go well for Republicans in the state of Texas. Colonel West came in, the elections went very well for Republicans in Texas. Now, you know, people can disagree on who was responsible, yada, yada, but that is one of his takeaways and you know, what he's talking about. So yes, he is very popular. And, you know, of course I've seen things of, you know, oh, but he's not from Texas, you know, kind of thing. So people may hold that against him. I was watching his announcement. I thought it was incredibly insightful. The way that he has portrayed him coming from Tennessee, as many of our founding Texas fathers did, you know, so right. You know, so we'll see, you know, how that plays out with the rest of the Republican primary voters.
Jason's rolling his eyes here because I'm from Tennessee, like all the native Texans are as well, too. Jason, go ahead, though.
We're like an old married couple now. You know, we know when to roll our eyes and when to smile. We don't even have to say a word anymore. So, Connie.
I like the Lyle Lovett song, You're Not From Texas, But Texas Wants You Anyway. That's what I say.
So. You're just feeding Whiteley right now. Let's just stop this whole line. Connie, I think Alan West has been probably the most aggressive as far as not pulling any punches with Governor Abbott, even, you know, while Alan West was, you know, heading up the party here in Texas. Is this going to be an ugly primary? Do you see this getting pretty bloody? And yeah, if so, is it enough to hurt Governor Abbott?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. Again, when I was looking through West's website last night, I thought it was very interesting. No, I take it back. I was actually reading one of the Texan articles. Shameless plug. So I forgot that's actually what it was. Brad Johnson with the Texan interviewed Alan West. And one of the things that he said was, I'm not running against anyone. I'm running for Texas, which I thought was interesting. Does that mean that it won't get ugly? I doubt it. I venture to that. I mean, everybody always says that starting out, this isn't going to get ugly. We're going to stick with the issues. And so certainly they will stick with the issues, but you know, you've got to point out why you're running. So you've got to point out what the incumbent did wrong and what you don't like about the incumbents, even if it is on policy, even if you don't get personal, which I don't think they will. Honestly, I don't think these particular candidates will get personal. You know, people will portray it as personal, but it's not when you stick to the issues. So anyway, it was just very interesting that Colonel West said that. I'm not running against anyone. I'm running for Texas. So obviously they want to stick to the issues. That's what, you know, we need to be voting on, not the person or the personality.
So we've talked about the three challengers. Let's go back to the incumbent here. He's running for his third term, Greg Abbott, former attorney general here in the state. Abbott literally has the Trump card right now. He has the endorsement of the former president, who, of course, is very popular with the Republican base. So it would seem to me, if I was on Abbott's team, hey, we got this thing, I don't want to say, you know, sealed up, but we have the one thing that everyone else wanted, and that's Trump's endorsement. How much does that help Abbott, and how much does that hurt the challengers?
Yeah, I'm very curious about that as well. Just this weekend, I was speaking to somebody who is a hardcore Trump supporter. And she has lived in Texas all her life, is very frustrated with the governor and particularly the coronavirus response. And so, you know, I asked her, and this is anecdotal, obviously, I get that. It's one person. But I said, okay, does Trump's endorsement mean anything to you? And she said, no. He did not live in Texas, you know, hasn't lived in Texas. He did not experience the things that we experienced while Governor Abbott was in Texas. While Governor Abbott was doing what he was doing in Texas. So, you know, I yes, it means a lot. It's obviously going to help Abbott. But then I also think, you know, it was kind of just exactly what she was saying. Those were my thoughts. You know, well, okay, he endorsed him. He doesn't live in Texas. He hasn't experienced it. You know, at the end of the day, I'm going to vote for who I think is best to lead Texas. So again, you know, and we've got a whole year from now, right, too. There's going to be a lot of things talked about. There's going to be a lot of ads. There's going to be hopefully forums. I certainly hope that Governor Abbott shows up and defends his policies against these candidates. I think if he doesn't, it would show a level of elitism that would be bad for him. And so, you know, we'll see how all this plays out. I think there's going to be a lot of other things in play other than just the endorsement.
And just to be clear for people who haven't kept up with all of this, Connie, the governor, you know, Texas was criticized nationally for maybe being a little bit too loose with its COVID restrictions, maybe opening too quickly. The criticism that the governor is facing here in the state from the right is exactly the opposite, that he went too far in shutting the state down.
Absolutely. Here's the deal. If you Republicans are supposed to stand for limited government, excuse me, and personal responsibility, these are the principles on which they run. So when you have a governor who has run on these principles and yet uses the force of government to make decisions for you and not allow those personal responsibility decisions, that's a problem. So, yes, you know, you either say, you know, I'm for big government some of the time and run on that, or you say I'm for limited government and personal responsibility. And then if you don't adhere to that once you're in office, you're going to be in trouble. And that's where we see Governor Abbott right now.
So, Connie, is he in trouble? Cut to the chase here for us. Is Abbott in trouble?
I think he is. Yes, I do.
And the one thing that's interesting to me is Don Helfand's here, just because he has some wealth behind him. He can finance some of his own campaign. And I remember a month or two ago when he sent out a tweet, I think is what it was, talking about the state. He wants the state to extend the border fencing. Everyone kind of thought, oh, you know, he's kind of crazy. What's he talking about? Fast forward a week. Abbott steals the idea and uses the idea himself. And he goes to the border and he, you know, makes it his own.
That's right.
That was interesting to me that maybe that idea wasn't that far-fetched for Republican voters because the governor clearly saw it as an opportunity.
Absolutely. And therein is why I say clearly there's some trouble here for the sitting governor to immediately take the campaign promise of a challenger and, you know, make it his own is very telling. And remember, we had legislators. I know at least one House rep, and I swear it was a senator too, but I couldn't remember just previous to coming on that authored legislation to finish the Trump wall. And not a word was said during the whole legislative session. You know, the governor has a bully pulpit. We all know this. This is how they get things moved and things done. And not a word during the legislative session to move these pieces of legislation that the legislators had already authored. Then a challenger comes along and the session ends. And all of a sudden, the governor is taking it upon himself to do exactly what the challenger stated. So, again, these are the kinds of things that those of us that are political and watching very closely see as, this is interesting, right?
And there's another, this is interesting, because this doesn't happen in a vacuum. We have another big incumbent, Ken Paxton, the attorney general, who has also drawn two very high profile Republican challengers in the primary, those being former Supreme Court Justice here in Texas, Eva Guzman, as well as George P. Bush. So some big names coming out against him there as well. What do you make of that one?
Well, that also doesn't surprise me. Obviously, Attorney General Paxton has had issues. It's definitely been the light has been shown on those in the press a lot. I will tell you, he still has a strong base of support, you know, going after the federal government and their overreach into Texas for Republicans is always frustrating. And so when you have an attorney general who goes after the federal government and pushes back, you get a lot of appreciation from Republicans. So I find this very interesting too. It does not surprise me that he has challengers as well. And for good reasons. So it'll be interesting. George P. obviously has the name ID. He will run a strong campaign. I'm really curious about Eva Guzman, who was the former
Supreme Court
Justice. Thank you. Yeah, sorry about that. So former Supreme Court Justice. She obviously has name ID too, because she's been a statewide, but I don't see it as much as obviously a George P. or a Ken Paxton. So I find this race to be very interesting as well. And I always welcome primary challengers. I think that's when, you know, the party faithful that, you know, come in and decide this is the direction we want to go. This is, you know, who we want to see representing us in these offices. I think it's always good and healthy for each party to have a good primary for these offices.
Of course, Eva Guzman is kind of doing the same path that Greg Abbott and John Cornyn took also, coming up through the judiciary,
yep.
Going for statewide office, which is what the senator and the governor did.
Connie, let's talk about the party itself here, because we just, you know, recently did an episode on the SAM party here in Texas. And you know, some folks have left the party. Obviously, the Republican Party is going through something right now. It's in the throes of some kind of a transition, because this isn't just happening in Texas. We're seeing it across the country. What do you make of what is happening in the party right now? I mean, you were there when the Tea Party was a right. big thing and swept a lot of Republicans into power, and it created a lot of division within the party, and something new emerged there. What are we likely to see when the dust settles on all this?
So in my mind, it's just the same. It's no different than when the Tea Party emerged. What those and I'll include myself in this because you all know me well enough. Conservative Republicans are so concerned about is that Republicans continue to run on conservative principles, but when they get into office, they don't adhere to them, right? So it's really nothing different. It's not anything that we haven't already seen the last 10 years. It's just a continuation of the same frustrations. Again, are you for limited government? Are you for growing government? Are you for personal responsibility? Are you for government dictating those responsibilities? Are you for, less taxes or if you grow government, you're going to have more taxes, right? Right. So the Overton window to so many in the Republicans continues to shift to the left, even though people out there may not see it that way. Other people, I should say, that is what is happening. I mean, I don't know if y'all have checked lately, but the U.S. national debt is $28 trillion. We've had both Republicans and Democrats in office at the federal level, and nothing has changed, right? So I remember when I was first running for the Senate, I remember distinctly saying that it was $16 trillion. And that wasn't that long ago. And now we're at $28 trillion. So people out there, will say, what's happening to the right? Why are they getting so extreme? And it's simply not true. What the right wants is for the right elected officials to actually do something about, all this government spending and growing of government. We're, very concerned that we cannot, that this path cannot be, is not sustainable. And so to answer your question, it's just the same. We want the Overton window to stop shifting to the left and government growing at all levels. And we just want, the power back to the people rather than the government.
But back to these two races, the AG's race and the governor's race. Do you think that either incumbent Paxton or Abbott goes into a runoff with their challenger?
I believe that I have thought that the governor's race absolutely will go into a runoff with one of the challengers. I haven't really thought through it on the AG's race. But right now, I'll say, yeah.
That gets really dangerous for Abbott, though, doesn't it? Because yes. Then you have a runoff that's, sometime next summer, and we know what turnout is like for those. That gets really, really tricky.
Absolutely. And that's long been a strategy for races. You get the many times to beat the incumbent. What you want to do is keep them under 50%. And then the conservative or the, whichever side of the aisle you're on, the one closest to the base of supporters generally will win that runoff. So, it is not going to be easy. There is no doubt about it. Abbott has $40 million. Right. That's a lot of airtime. Texas is a huge state. It costs a lot of money. But again, we're talking about a small subset of voters here, Republican primary voters. So it's not as important in the, it is important, but it's not the same in a Republican primary as it is in a general election when you have to get out to the whole state, everybody to get out and vote.
Yeah. And of course, the perfect example of that, what Jason was talking about, is in 2012, when this little known guy named Ted Cruz, former Solicitor General for the state, was running against the popular or once popular David Dewhurst, who was Lieutenant Governor of the state. And everyone thought that Dewhurst would have it locked up. Of course, Ted Cruz comes in and sweeps it, and the rest is history there.
That's right.
Connie, I always love talking to you. Thank you so much for the time, the insight. And like you said, there is a long way to go before primaries.
That's
next year. We don't know if it's going to be March or May or whenever it is. So I know we'll be calling you back.
Thank you. I love visiting with you guys. I appreciate it so much. Thank you. Call me anytime.
All right. So that is the viewpoint from Connie Burton, the former state senator here in Texas. We're going to get a completely different viewpoint, but also from another Republican, at least former Republican. He's been more independent here of late. Jason Villalba, former state rep here in Texas. We're going to get to him in just a second. First, a word from our sponsor, though.
Oh, we got multiple Jasons.
We have three Jasons. This is not the first time we've had three Jasons, but this is the first time in a long time.
It's always very confusing, so let's go by last names.
Yeah, just call me JV. That's easier.
JV,
yeah,
I like
Villalba.
That.
Yeah. Yeah, good to see you again, man. So let's talk about all this news about Republicans who are challenging Abbott and Paxton. Let's start with the governor's race first, since this is kind of the biggest one in the state, obviously. First question, is Greg Abbott in trouble?
I don't believe Abbott's in trouble. I think Abbott's been strong enough as a conservative during the time that he served to really to keep his bona fides among conservatives. I think he does command the center voters. I think the real question becomes who on the left is going to challenge him, because if it's a Democrat that's viable and credible and someone with centrist bona fides, that means a lot of people that left the Trump train in 2020 might jump over and vote for Democrats. So that's, I think, where the real race is.
Yeah, that's the real the double whammy for Governor Abbott here, isn't it? If he does draw a challenger who's a Democrat, who's, you know, well funded and well known and gets some traction early, and he's still trying to put out a fire in his own party and deal with a primary, that's his nightmare scenario, isn't it?
I think it is. I mean, he's already tacked to the right. I mean, I know a lot of people talk about Beto as being the candidate, and Beto certainly is well known, but our numbers at the Texas Hispanic Policy Foundation and other pollsters will tell you that Beto's probably not the strongest candidate to run for Democrats. And so who they put up is a good question. I don't know the answer to that, but we're going to
find
out.
Who is the strongest? Do you know that?
I've been looking at the numbers, and it's very difficult to find a well-known Democrat who can win crossover voters. Now, I think Matthew McConaughey would certainly fit that role if he decides to run as a Democrat, but really no one knows his politics. He's more of a libertarian than anything else, independent. So, you know, who the Democrat is, I mean, I know that there are some names like Rafael Ancilla here in Dallas, who's got strong name identification, who's been very active on television and shows real centrist bona fides. But, you know, other than that, around the state, you've got some great names, but nobody that's risen to that statewide ranking level that would be big enough to beat Abbott.
Is Rafael Ancilla talking about running?
Oh, no. I always get in his ear. He is a very good friend of mine, and I just think the world of him. And I've encouraged him to think about moving up. But, you know, Rafael has such a strong following in his district. He is so well respected in the legislature. It obviously will depend upon what he needs to do. But I'm a big fan of his. I think I'm hopeful that he serves in a statewide capacity in the future.
Here you are throwing grenades, man, and taking off on us, Villalba, about Ancilla possibly running. Hey, here's a question that I'm curious about. Where do you think that Abbott went wrong with conservatives to draw at least three challengers?
Well, I think the biggest tar pit that he stepped in was during the COVID crisis, during the pandemic. And I think when he decided to close down the economy for a period of time, which, by the way, I think was good policy and smart for Texas, and really ended up being the right thing to do during the time of it that was ongoing. But I really do think that might have hurt him with the grassroots. I think it's unfair to characterize, though, Abbott as not being supported by conservatives. I mean, we're talking about a governor who's been very conservative on major issues like Second Amendment and the pro-abortion or anti-abortion type measures that really resonates with the grassroots. It's only been in a handful of areas where he might not have placated the furthest of the far right Trumpiets to win those voters. And I think those are the only ones that are barking. And the problem with it is those are the individuals who often vote in the Republican Party primary.
So it's a small group of people that you're trying to win over for that primary. But Jason, it can be a real stumbling block getting past them.
It's a tiny block. I remember when I was in elected office and we would look at our numbers and, you know, I was very strong in the general election. I was going to win overwhelmingly in a general. But boy, those primary voters did not care for the centrism that I put forward. I think Abbott faces the same kind of problem. It's a, like you said earlier, a double-edged sword. he's trying to, you know, reach the right, but he's got to stay in the center in order to win a general.
So it's not unusual what Greg Abbott is doing, obviously. Candidates of each party run to their extreme sides in order to win the primary, and then run back to the center, which we presume that Abbott may or may not do. He's doing the first thing here by running to the right. But for the primary, where does a centrist voter, a centrist conservative like you, who do you vote for?
It's, you know, it's a tough choice. I mean, you know, I did not vote for Donald Trump in the primary. I refused to vote for Donald Trump as a centrist. I'm a Republican lifelong, you know, but I've recently identified as an independent until such time that the Trump strains of politics sort of remove themselves from the Republican Party. I'm a classic Reagan Republican. You know, the old school principles of smaller government and strong national defense and those kinds of issues. But, you know, this Republican Party is really focused on fringy issues like constitutional carry and 6-week prohibition on abortions without any exceptions, on, you know, issues that, again, resonate with what they call the grassroots, but certainly don't resonate with ordinary Texans. You know what I'm concerned about? Whether or not I can turn the lights on or the air conditioner on when it gets hot in Texas, you know,
you and a lot of other people.
Yeah. I mean, look, that's what impacts Texas. But on this call and the special session, you didn't see anything about the grid. That's mind blowing to someone like me. So who do I vote for in the general or the primary election? I mean, I have to see the candidates that are going to be out there, but I'm certainly not voting for West or Huffines. I think Abbott's what I'm left with. I know Abbott personally. I know he's a thoughtful and smart and strategic person. I know he's very, very good and cares about Texas. Some of his positions I don't like, but look, I guess there's going to be a lot of candidates who aren't perfect candidates for me and for other centrists. And so I think we're going to have to find not the best candidate, but the least worst candidate.
Well, let's talk about another Trump loyalist, and that's Ken Paxton, the attorney general, who is the incumbent running for his third term. And he, too, for the state's number three office, is facing two Republican challengers, George P. Bush, the land commissioner, outgoing land commissioner next year, and then the former Supreme Court Justice Ava Guzman. What do you make of this race?
Well, this is a different calculus, right? Abbott's issue isn't the same issue that Ken Paxton faces. Ken is under indictment. He's under indictment in several different situations. There are other pending charges against him, and he's been troubled. You know, since the moment he really became the AG, he's had to fight legal challenges to his personal situation. And so I think that's a different analysis. I think the reason why the challengers have come forward, someone like Commissioner Bush and Justice Guzman, is because they perceive that there's going to be an opportunity to challenge a weakened candidate. Now, that being said, Paxton is very popular among the Trump primary voters. And so I think he's got, you know, a very good head of steam going into this race. I saw the recent numbers from, I don't know if it was the Dallas Morning News or otherwise, where he was in the lead. You know, he was beating George P. Bush by pretty handily, about 10 points. And Guzman, who had just registered for the vote, had just started to show up. I do think this race is a little more dynamic than the race that we're seeing for the governor's race. I do think that Commissioner Bush will be fully funded. You know, Justice Guzman, interestingly, immediately received the endorsement of the Texans for Lawsuit Reform. That's compelling, right? Texas Lawsuit.
Because it's, go ahead, Jason. Explain who TLR is.
TLR is an organization that really works hand in hand with the Republican Party infrastructure. So there's another group called the Associated Republicans of Texas. And really, ART and TLR work together hand in hand to sort of represent the establishment of Republicans. And the fact that TLR immediately endorsed Ava Guzman is really interesting because, you know, there's no more patricial Republican than someone like Commissioner Bush. And so the fact that TLR, this establishment Republican group, would take the position of supporting Ava Guzman was, I think, quite interesting. And also in Dallas, I think you saw some very wealthy individuals have started to support Ava Guzman. So I think she's fully funded. I think Commissioner Bush is fully funded. I think there's some more hammers to drop in the Ken Paxton arena. And I think that's going to have an impact in this race. I think it's going to be very close going into the fall. I think you're going to see that race get very active, maybe a little juicy, as we say, right? I mean, you saw some of the words that were being thrown about from Ken Paxton and George Bush and back and forth. They were getting pretty salty quickly. So I think it's going to be an interesting race to watch.
Do you think that the Republican primary produces a runoff in the governor's race and or the attorney general race?
Well, you know, I think that Huffines and West are going to split that really far right fringe vote. I think Abbott's in pretty good shape. I think he wins without a runoff. Now, again, it's early, right? We're talking about this race. The votes won't be held until March of 2022. And so, you know, there's a long time. Things can happen during that. But I just think that Abbott is strong enough. He's been well advised. He's got the resources he needs to put those two to bed. And those two candidates, West and Huffines, you know, again, as much as they may appeal to certain grassroots types, they're just a little too far to the right, even for, you know, SREC types, which is the State Republican Executive Committee and other people in the grassroots. And so I don't think they really have much of a chance to beat Abbott, but I think they certainly are interested in getting their message out. I do think there is going to be a runoff in the AG's race. You know, again, Paxton is a damaged candidate. I mean, you can't have an indictment and not be damaged going into even a primary. And who ends up being the number two person after Paxton, I don't know yet. That's going to be an interesting and compelling race too. And so we'll have to watch that one. But I do think that one ends up in a runoff.
You know, JV, when I hear you talk about Republicans, it almost sounds like you're talking about two different parties at this point, the different factions within the party. Is the fight for the soul ongoing? And do you think that the outcome can be predetermined here? I mean, you sound pretty confident that, you know, the quote unquote Trump strains will work their way out. But is the outcome predetermined?
Well, I'm a perennial optimist. I'm hopeful that happens. I cannot predict it with certainty just because, look, I'm sitting here as an unelected official because of that strain, right? I mean, I was that squishy center rhino that everyone called me. I mean, I was a centrist Republican who believed strongly in those issues, and I was summarily unelected by the grassroots. And that's just the position that I took. I sleep well at night because of it. There is certainly a battle underway for, you know, the heart and soul of the Republican Party. It really started back in the 2008 Obama election with the Tea Party. The Tea Party morphed into this cult-like following of Trump. But even Tea Party and Trumpism can be distinguished from one another. I think Tea Party groups were really focused on issues like constitutional fealty and making sure that they were truly conservative. And the big buzzword back then was, who's the true conservative in the race? That's gone now. I mean, what you have now with Trump is, who is most likely to accept whatever it is Trump does and says, including the big lie in Washington, including insurrection? As long as you stand by your man, then that's the party. There are two parties now. You've got the classic Republican Party, and you've got the Trump Party, and those two are different. They run under the same banner of R, but there's unquestionably a dissection or a division between those two groups. Who wins that group? I think time will ultimately erode the support of the cult of Trump. And hopefully that leads back to, you know, the classic Republicanism. But I think the party's forever changed by what Trump represented. I think there's going to always be sort of that libertarian strain, that populist strain that Trump introduced into the Republican Party in a very different way than it's been reintroduced in the past. That's going to remain. My hope is that, you know, common sense Republicans like Liz Cheney and Adam Kinzinger from Illinois and, you know, other people like that start to really grow their ranks. I certainly am among them, and hopefully get back to common sense, conservatism like I remember when I was growing up.
You are an optimist, Jason. I mean, looking at the crystal ball, man, I would say just the opposite right now. Here's my last question. I should have asked you early on this.
Don Huffines and Alan West, when they both announced their candidacies, and if you look on their websites, they're not really taking the fight to Abbott, not mentioning Abbott by name, but talking about conservative principles and policies that they would implement. Isn't that a mistake? Don't they need to come out swinging if you're trying to knock an incumbent off a spot?
It is curious to me. I saw Alan West's first interview with, I think it was Mark Davis. He says, I'm not running against anyone. I'm running for something, which I think is interesting. My experience in campaigns is the early steps in a campaign are always what I call kittens and rainbows, right? Let's talk about things that everyone can resonate with. Let's talk about our own biography and what it is that we stand for. Let's get people really firmly entrenched in our camp. And then let's start hammering our opponents. It's called suppression voting. Usually suppression starts about midway through the campaign or late in the campaign. A lot of times if you see those negative flyers, those negative ads, those negative commercials, they're going to be coming out right as people are voting. And so I think what you're going to see for the next several months, really, because we are far away from voting, is a lot of kittens and rainbows from those folks. But you're going to start to see the ugliness rear its head. I mean, that's why I was surprised about the AG's race, where you saw Commissioner Bush and Ken Paxton start to get after it already, which I thought was curious.
After the past year or two, Jason, I think that that people are looking forward to months of kittens and rainbows, though. You know, I think we need a lull.
Well, I certainly am hopeful of that. Again, I am the perennial optimist. But look, I understand politics is a rough and tumble, bare knuckle sport. If you're not ready to get into that ring and get messy and throw some punches and take some punches, you're going to lose. And all these fellows and gals, and I shouldn't say gals, all these fellows and women who are in these elected contests are going to be in fights. They're going to be in desperate fights, and it's going to get interesting for people like me and you and Jason. I think it's going to be very intriguing to watch how it plays out. I think the battle for the soul of the Republican Party continues, and we're going to see how it plays out in 2022.
Former state rep awesome. Jason Villalba, known on this podcast as simply JV. Thanks for the perspective. Really appreciate it, man.
All right, guys. Thanks so much. Have a great day and God bless.
Kittens and rainbows, Jason.
Kittens and rainbows and a Yingling beer.
We should title the podcast Kittens and Rainbows.
And a Yingling beer.
Yeah. These guys are definitely drinking.
Yeah, you know, but I mean it. I do think that, you know, I know that people are eager. And I know that, you know, it seems like we never end the election cycle anymore. And there's never any downtime. And I know people want to get back to the polls and they want to get, you know, whatever change they want or continue in a direction. But I really do think that people are just kind of ready for this break of let's not get too wild with the campaigning just yet, but it's hot right now. It's already hot.
Yeah, and the whole kittens and rainbows thing is interesting because Jason comes at this from a former candidate himself who's run several times. So he knows what to watch for. And mm-hmm. like you said, people are a little exhausted and candidates and campaigns know that. So they're going to kind of ease into things. They'll lay low this summer. They'll raise some money and see if anyone else gets into the race. And then things will really start up, you know, to crank up after Labor Day. That's when things will really start going, and we'll see how, you know, strong these candidates are at that point. The biggest question is this whole episode focused on Republicans, but what in the world will Democrats do? Every Democrat I talk to say, oh, there's time, just relax. You guys want to get so ahead of things. I mean, yeah, we do, but everyone's asking this also. People inside the Democratic Party are asking this. Are we going to have anyone viable to run against the Republicans? And they haven't over the years. They've had, you know, candidates run, but they haven't had, at least for the governor's race, they haven't had, you know, someone viable in a long time.
I predict you have already chosen the title for one of our soon to come podcasts here. What in the world will Democrats do? What in the world are Democrats going to do?
Let me have another swig of Yingling. I'll see if I can think of something better.
So now we'll put the cart in front of the horse and start finding the title first and then build the podcast around that. How's that sound?
Guys, thanks so much for listening. We always appreciate it. Hope you guys have a great week here as we move on down the road. And we're going to keep our beer cold and our minds to politics. Not minds to politics. What is it? Our ear to the ground. Beer cold and ear to the ground. Something like that, right?